This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 297, Summer, of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer. Ginger. And this is...
Almost episode 300.
And we are in love with all things Outlander.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Like 296, 290, anything is close to 300. But seven's like, oh Lord, we're three away. Oh gosh.
It's going to happen.
Okay. Yes. So welcome. Hello. How are you? I haven't spoken to you since, I don't know.
Earlier this afternoon.
Just a few minutes ago. Okay. So any announcements? Let's say, why don't you share our announcement, Summy?
Well, Summy. Don't call me Summy. Look. My name is Her Highness Shimmer.
Okay.
So
if they can call you Shimmer, I can call you Summy from time to time. It's not on the rig.
It's all right. You can call me Shimmy.
Shimmy.
Shimmy, Shimmy.
About your butt.
You should. It's pretty memorable. What I was going to say is that I don't know that we've announced it other than just on Twitter, but for those who don't maybe follow us on Twitter, our Outlander fan panel will be back at Comic-Con in July.
Yes. We're very excited. We were hopeful. We're always hopeful. Obviously, if you don't apply, you don't get anything. So, but every year this is how I look at it. Every year it's a blank slate. Blank slate is probably the wrong term. Every year it's a fresh application. I don't know that if you've done it before, it helps. I don't think it can hurt, but that's why I don't take anything for granted. And I'm always like kind of waiting with bated breath until we get the email. And the scary thing is that whenever you get the email and they tell this to you, they don't tell you like how sly they are. You apply and they warn you, you're going to get one email. And the email doesn't even say congratulations. It doesn't say, you know, here's your stuff. I mean, it does say something about Comic-Con in the subject line. But the thing is, it's like if you're not, and I am like frantically opening and reading any email from Comic-Con, whether it's about the museum, whether it's about some press thing, I look at everything. So when I got this email, Summer and I were actually out at an event like 2 weeks ago, right? Almost 2 weeks ago. And I looked down at my phone and I was like, oh my God, we got that. So
she said it just like that. Just like that.
No, we were in public. I would never do that.
And everyone turned around and went, what is wrong with her?
Oh, Summer. So anyway.
Don't say my name like that.
Summer. Stop it. Okay, stop it. Now you're giving me a complex. I'm the one who goes on and on about not doing incest. And then you say I talk like that to you?
You did. That's what I'm saying. You need to like watch it.
Okay. So we found out a few weeks ago. We shared it last week, I think. We're pleased as punch. That was a few weeks ago, but I don't know that we said it here. So yeah, this is exciting. We still don't know if Stars will be there. We don't know. But if you are planning to go, let us officially and warmly invite you to join us. As more comes out and as we're allowed to say more, we are happy to share it.
Well, and on that note, let's move on to our read-along. This week, we will begin our read-along with chapter 23, entitled The Bard.
So Roger returns home from an exciting day, oot and a boot.
That's the worst. He had the worst day. I don't care what you were trying to tell me. He was given literally the worst job.
To go find the people that don't exist?
Yes, not only that, but not even really sent in a direction. Just
go
like,
find
I heard rumor. I heard rumor that there were some Dutch people maybe over around there. Go maybe find them, maybe don't. Let me know what you do. It felt like the biggest wild goose chase.
Totally.
With the end of which being, If you don't find them, cool. If you find them, tell them this. And if you do find them, good luck telling them about it in Dutch, which you only kind of know.
Yeah, it was what he said. I don't think I wrote it down, but he was out or oot. I don't know that he was on the horse the whole time, but they were mostly on the horse. But yeah, he was out for like 10.
He fell off.
That's how he got so muddy. Yeah. But he was out. At least he tells, I think Diana tells us as the narrator of the chapter, tells us that he was out or he had been on the horse or he had been searching for like 10 hours that day. Oh my gosh.
The whole day.
So yeah, they didn't find that. Susanna M. writes, I loved the way Roger was so romantic about his coming back to...
What?
She wrote, okay.
Don't ever pause there.
I was gonna delete that, but I'll leave it.
Don't ever pause there. He was so romantic about his cum.
Summer, stop it. You're the one who says we need to like think about cleaning up our show. I don't think our show is dirty. Come on.
Oh, no, no. No, no, no. I don't want to clean up our show. I just don't want you to have tweets on Twitter that feel very uncomfortable because those are forever. Whereas this, you can listen to and forget about it. Whereas Twitter, it just lives there for people to stare at and it's static and there's no context.
Unless they listen. Correct. So I love, okay, Susanna M. writes, I loved the way Roger was so romantic about his comeback to Brianna after so long in the wild. Or having been away so long that day, dreaming about how he and Brianna could have some alone time together. But then he clashes violently with her day-to-day reality. She's in such a mood that everything he says will be a shot in his own foot. And when he tells her, are you going dressed like that? Oh boy, he shouldn't have.
Well, not only is he not going dressed as that, he now has to fumble about with putting like a great kilt on.
Come on.
Because the kilts he's used to in the 60s are the ones that come sewn and pre-pleated. And you just, you know, buckle them on. Where this one you have to finger make all the pleats.
Jemmy is still teething. Because, yeah, it's been less than a day since the last chapter. So after he comes home, she sits to nurse Jemmy. Now, Roger, as Summer was saying earlier about his falls, Roger has mud all over him, and he says that he fell off a horse several times that day. Jamie, Brianna says, has brought down a tartan for him to wear that night, and the romantic smell of sauerkraut in the air, thanks to the Mueller's.
Look, I like sauerkraut, but I don't find it romantic at all.
Yeah, I don't, me either.
But I don't live in the backwoods and have nothing to do. So, you know, things might change.
Roger cleans up what little he can using like a water and a rag. And what about those Dutchmen? Quote, Jamie sent me up to the Northeast to look for a family of Dutchmen he'd heard had settled near Boiling Creek. When I read that, even though I read the word boiling, I immediately thought, I don't want to wait for our lives to be over. I roll it up, 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 and will it be? Yeah, Dawson's Creek. And it's...
That doesn't sound like boiling at all.
I know. It's not about the word boiling.
So you just saw the word creek?
Yes.
You have issues because I didn't think of that at all.
Yeah, but who's... Come on.
That was a big jump. That was a
what,
huge
creek
jump.
To Dawson's Creek? No, it's not.
Boiling Creek to Dawson's Creek?
I just told you
creek?
It wasn't yeah. The word boiling. It was the word creek.
Obviously.
Hey then. So what's weird?
That was a strange jump you made. That is not the right jump because that is not the operative word.
It's not a jump that you would have made, and it's not a jump that is linear. I give you that. It's a ginger jump. So he had been, Jamie had sent him up there to look for the family of Dutchmen to tell the men of that family of Dutchmen about the militia summons, but they couldn't find any of them. Roger dances around to put the pleated tartan on, and Bree says to Jem, see, Daddy? Pretty Daddy. Quote, this made me laugh.
So pretty.
So pretty. Quote, she turned to Jemmy, who stared open-mouthed at the vision of male glory before him and blossomed into a wide, slow smile, a trickle of drool hanging from the pouting curve of his lip. Unquote. I just imagine little Jemmy like, oh my God, that's not, he obviously is not having these thoughts, but just like, oh, Daddy.
Or is he just staring at how awkwardly Roger's putting it on?
It's already on now.
Oh, never mind. I thought he was staring at him.
He may have,
awkwardly putting on the great kilt because he Because he points out that Jamie Fraser can put his on standing
totes.
Up.
Yeah, totes. So Roger takes Jem and a guitar to the big house. Jamie even gave Bree a list of songs.
Dude, her recall for what he wanted was kind of incredible. I thought at first she was like, let me find the list. But then it was like, he wants this and this and this. She'd remembered all the things. Like, she didn't write it down, but she knew all the songs. And there was a lot of songs. I would not have remembered.
No.
Those specificities that she did.
So I thought it's funny. And Diana does point it out later in the chapter. I think at least once. But I'm not sure he did. She may have alluded to it right here, but she definitely takes it straight on later in the chapter. It's funny that Jamie is requesting or instructing that he have these songs.
Oh, that was this chapter.
Yeah. And, well, here. Oh, it was here?
Yeah, she makes a comment
it's
about
funny how Jamie's requesting songs.
About how he was, yeah, he's like, I didn't think he even noticed music. He doesn't seem to care at all. And she's like, yeah, no, he can't sing or hold a tune, but he notices men and he notices people and he can see how people react when you sing.
But basically, he wants Roger to help rally the troops. Traditional Scottish songs, a few of those, and then some warmongering stuff. But nothing from the 45 except Johnny Cope. Quote, he may not listen to music, Roger, but he listens. And he watches. He knows how people act and how they feel when they hear you do those songs. Unquote. It really is almost like another Dougal night. Get him warmed up before the main event. Now by that...
But no one got stripped down. Huh? Nobody got their shirt ripped
true.
Off of them.
Not that part of the Dougal, but the first part of the Dougal. Like, warm them up and then get the crowds rolling and going. And then they chat about the literal fiery cross and its history or its 20th century occurrences. And so Bree, who, although Roger knows about it, and he definitely, he knows, like, its history, he doesn't have the same, understandably, the same feelings about it because... She grew up in America with knowledge of these crosses and the KKK, and it makes her feel all kinds of, like, uncomfortable, understandably, as it would to most 20th and 21st century Americans or people who, you know, have spent any time here. But yeah, I think it's one thing. This is a good illustration. It's one thing to know about a historical fact. So, like, Roger finds it probably not thrilling, but fascinating that he's going to witness this type of tradition, this type of this practice. And yeah, it was just interesting to see their two different feelings about it. Their two different takes on it. And he points out, you know, what if this is what actually brings it to, what if this is the first instance of it coming to the colonies? Huh. And yeah, so there's a lot of things to think about there. It was a really, I love it when, I mean, I love having all of our top main characters, but especially when the discussion goes to things like this. Susanna M. closes us out with, it's funny to notice that Jamie is not one of the characters in this chapter or present in this chapter, but he is such a present figure in it. Even though he is not a participant in this chapter, the author creates an important subplot to show us what he has been doing to create his militia. We learn that he is giving Roger more and more responsibility and making him feel more welcome to the family and to the forming of clan in the Ridge. A sign of that are the little missions he is giving him. Another sign is the character of the Bard that he creates to captivate his tenants. And Roger is an important part of that, with the tartan provided by Jamie and the perfect songs chosen. By the way, I loved the description of how the kilt is pleated each time it's used. Where did Jamie learn how to manipulate people like that? Was it with his dear uncle Colum or the war chief uncle Dougal?
Sure, it was, yeah. Dougal.
But he does manipulate them well by creating a big event with a charismatic bard and a fiery cross. With this, he will create a sense of brotherhood between the men and a hope that everyone will follow him. He may be a Fraser, but he is a Mackenzie as well. Good point, Susanna. Maybe this is school history for all Americans, but I never knew that the KKK was based on their burning cross in this old Scottish custom, and how the KKK distorted the whole idea. I love how Diana Gabaldon is always giving us some history lesson, adding interest to the reading.
Well, and then, you know, she also mentions, well, where do you think they came up with the word clan?
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
Think about it.
Absolutely. So yeah. There's so much that, I mean, and I know this is not at all the center of any talking point of this chapter, but another example of an entity, a group of people using an ancient custom or an ancient image to their own end, what the Nazis did with the swastika. Okay.
And that was chapter 23. We're going to move on to chapter 24, entitled Playing with Fire, which is appropriately titled.
There was lots of food and lots of drink. Lass was eaten and was drunken. As he sings Killiecrankie, of course, we mean Roger, he's thinking about the people and about the cross. Slowly, people began to join in as he starts singing Johnny Cope. Even the mullahs begin, quote, improvising their own sort of yodeling chorus round the back, waving their cups in sloshing salute to each verse, unquote.
And for those of you who are not audiobook listeners, you should check it out just for the fact that if you weren't familiar with how any of these songs go, Davina sings them.
Yes, I will provide anything that Diana mentioned, like Killiecrankie, Johnny Cope, Flower of Scotland. And I know that that was a 20th century composition. However, anything that is mentioned by title, I'll find some version of it, and I'll include a link to a YouTube of that in the show notes. Then it was Jamie's turn. Roger then walks over to Bree, who hands him Jemmy to go get him some food. Jamie appears, quote, in his best gray gentleman's coat, kilted below in soft blue tartan, his hair loose and blazing on his shoulders, with a small warrior's plait down one side, adorned with a single feather.
So Braveheart. That's like, I know. That's Mel Gibson's version of Braveheart. Now, granted, that was, for any historian, they know that he was not dressed or looking like any Highlander of that era. However, he was dressed like Diana just described Jamie.
Firelight glinted from the knurled gold. Is that knurled or gnarled? I don't even know if that's a word.
It's knurled. K-N-U-R-L-E-D. Ugh. Knurled. I like to pronounce it with the K.
Firelight.
Knurled.
Firelight glinted from the knurled gold hilt of his dirk and the brooch that held his looped plaid. He looked pleasant enough, but his manner overall was serious intent. He made a good show and knew it, unquote. So Jamie's making a show of it. He shows the summons from Governor Tryon and rallies his troops. He describes the tradition of the fiery cross in the Highlands and then returns to their own time, quote, but this is a new land. And while we are friends, neighbors and countrymen, and we will be companions in arms, we are not clan. While I am given command, I am not your chief, unquote. The hell you aren't, Roger thought, or well on your way to it anyway. And Jamie pulls a torch from the fire, ready to light the cross. Quote, let this fiery cross stand as a testament to our honor to invoke God's protection for our families until we come safe home again, unquote. And then he lights up. The flame was small and gradual with no woof or whoosh, whatever, of a fire. Quote, Roger felt Brianna sigh beside him, some of the tension leaving her. It slowly grew with the burning cross as a backdrop. Jamie speaks again. They'll ride in the morning. At Jamie's nod, Roger again sings, this time Flower of Scotland. Interesting. Quote, Roger knew the man who'd written it in his own time, but Jamie had heard it and, knowing the history of Stirling and Bannockburn, strongly approved the sentiment, unquote. Roger feels all swarmy at the thought of the connections of history, those who had fought and those who had died, Claire who had fought, his own father who had fought and died, Jamie in his own time, and others. And the words that John Adams would say, quote, I will be a warrior that my son may be a merchant and his son may be a poet, unquote. Roger thinks, maybe it was the red hair, the Viking blood that gave those tall, fiery men the gift of rousing men to war. Joe B. writes, at a recent family gathering, the conversation turned to Outlander, as it increasingly does, as my aunt, now up to Breath of Snow and Ashes, after the fiery cross nearly put her off, believes that Diana really has it in for Roger. And it's hard to disprove in some respects. He's been through so much already. So one of the many good things about this chapter is that one of Roger's most comfortable, natural, and transferable to the 18th century skills is being recognized, used, and honored. Jamie, although tone deaf himself, has a commander's understanding of how music and its ability to affect emotion can be used to create a sense of group identity. As illustrated in the Preston Pans episode of season 2, where marching together creates a cohesion that will not only mean they fight harder, but better.
Did you just say fart harder?
Fight harder.
I swear you did. Go back and listen to that later.
I can't. That will not only mean they fight harder, but better. There are stories from World War I of German soldiers being more worried when they heard the pipes before a charge. They also referred to Scottish soldiers who still wore kilts as devils in skirts. And in World War II, there's a story, possibly apocryphal but plausible, a commander quipping that he needed another division or another piper. Roger is playing his audience into an army, no matter how Jamie tactically downplays this. He uses changes of rhythm, speed, lyrics, and memory to wind them up for the main act. Jamie reminds me of Henry V before Agincourt in this chapter, where he has come among his troops, although not disguised as Henry was, to understand their disposition and now is about to deliver his version of the St. Crispin's Day speech, Act 4, Scene 3, at the end of which he has his, quote, happy few, his band of brothers, unquote. Ending with Flower of Scotland, released in 1964, and an example of a rising and renewed patriotic identity of Scotland post-war, is a contemporary song for Roger that taps into older history with traditional elements of form, complete with rousing chorus, is a good choice. Not that we would expect less from Jamie. It uses the past to model a future, and although the fight they are going to is one that is called by the crown, Roger, Bree, Claire, and Jamie know that it is one more step in the road that will lead to the America that Brianna knows. How appropriate that a song from the future is the start of the community of Fraser's Ridge entering the road to the revolution.
And that was chapter 24, and we will be finishing this week by discussing chapter 25, entitled The Angling of My Rest?
Angeling.
Or is it angeling?
Angeling.
Because I couldn't remember how I heard Davina pronounce it, because I feel like I said it one way, and then I think Davina said it an opposite way, and I was like, did I say it wrong? And I think that I thought it was angling, and she said angeling, so you're right, it is angeling. Welcome back.
That's all staying in.
Do it.
Claire and Jamie.
I stand by
Claire
it.
Claire and Jamie bang before they leave in the morning. Claire.
That's what you do.
Claire echoes his words back to him, quote, it will be all right, unquote. And he replies, I know. And the reason I point this out is because two chapters ago, when she goes down with Jemmy.
Downtown?
Downtown? That I don't know. Georgia she Brown? Goes to the spring where Jamie is, and he does the whole, like, cleansing thing. Mm-hmm. She's the one who's worried. And, I mean, I'm sure they're both still worried. But she's the one who's more concerned after, you know, seeing him, like, basically consecrate himself. And she goes up to him, and she's like, you know, you don't have to do this. Da, da, da. And he tells her, it's all right. It will be all right, Sassenach. Well, here... she, and that's why I wrote, she echoes his own words back to him. It will be all right.
You know, when you say that somebody echoes somebody else's words, you assume that they had said them at some point.
Shut the fuck up. What is that?
It's the bicycle noise that you're going to put over yourself.
No, I'm going to delete the whole thing. Jamie's hungry. He didn't get to eat he can't eat before he goes on stage.
He can't eat before
He's
public
got a nervous
speaking.
He gets tum-tum. Nervous. And she thought that, but among all the times after he got off stage or after he was done speaking and everyone, you know, was coming up to talk to him or ask, just want to speak a word, she thought he had gotten something afterwards, but he hadn't. So she offers to go downtown. She offers to go downstairs to get him something. And he's like, no, stay here. He's like, Roger and Bree are still up. He can hear at least Roger's voice. And like he can tell so much that's going on with his ears. I mean, she thought that they had gone or that Bree had gone. And he's like, no, I heard her. They both heard Roger, but she didn't know that. So they play their verbal journaling game of recounting the day's events to each other. Lorraine B. writes, after the excitement of the burning of the cross and the melding of men into companions in arms under the command of one Jamie Fraser, this chapter is the calm before the storm. Shh, Lorraine, don't give that away. Their simple acts of making love, a caring massage, a peaceful snuggle, the loving support and comfort to each other enforce the wonderful relationship Jamie and Claire have. It's these in-between moments that I treasure. As they both try to fall asleep, it's funny to see that Claire's rehashing of the day morphs into an anxiety-causing checklist of things she is taking with her, and the white sow keeps sabotaging Jamie's pig count. Pig counting, sorry. So neither of them can sleep. And as Lorraine said, Jamie's trying to even count pigs and he can't. Claire mentions that when she and Frank went to premarital counseling, the priest had told them to say a rosary in bed together. And so Jimmy's like, you want to do that, Sasnug? She says no, but she suggests that maybe they pray together, a going to bed prayer. So he recollects and he chooses one that his father had taught him not too long before he died. It's pretty long.
You're missing the funniest part of that whole
what
statement.
What was it?
That she
no,
said.
No, I'm not. I saved it for you.
She wasn't sure whether this was meant to be a devotion, an aid to sleep, or only a church sanctioned method of birth control. Them praying at night together, doing the rosary.
Yeah, that was funny. I agree.
Sure sounds like it.
Stop.
Yes, that was funny.
No, I'm agreeing with you. It was
funny. I'm gonna do that from here on out whenever you try to angle for me to laugh. I'm gonna go, yeah, that was funny. Stop. Plays well. Plays well on an audio medium.
It. Oh, God. He chooses this prayer and it's long. I started typing it out and it was like on one page and I hit the ebook to go to the next page and I was like, nope. I'm not. Delete.
You're not going to read this whole thing, are you?
No, I just told you I didn't write it.
Okay.
So I started typing out going, this is going to be so pretty. And then when I turned the page, I was like, nope. Y'all can go read it, you know, or you listen to Davina if you want someone to read it to you. But a beautiful line of it is, it's all beautiful, but I think the line that the title of the chapter comes from is, and bless, oh, bless me to the angeling of my rest.
Yeah, it's way more poetic than angling of my rest.
They sleep and Jamie wakes up to write a note to Lord John. Long story short, he asks John,
that is not a note. That is a long letter.
It is
could you imagine?
It is long.
Could you imagine? It's like, I'm going to jot down a quick note to pass to somebody in class. This is a short novella.
This is an essay. Yes. So
this is a Lord John novel. Literally.
Long story short. And this is what, because of 18th century politeness, it took Jamie 87 pages to get to the one thing he wanted to say. Look, shiz is going down. Anything happens to me, can you take care of my family? That's all it was about. That's all. Okay? Okay. See, Ginger can get down to brass tacks. Let's go. But don't ever rely on that again. So, and then we see there's a PS. And he thanks him for news about Bonnet and says, yeah, I didn't change my mind. I'm like, wait, what? We didn't get this news. He didn't tell us. So that's interesting. And then the PPS is that copies of his will, etc.
So much PP.
Are with Farquhar Campbell, who is not too far from Cross Creek. Lorraine B. writes, when Claire asks Jamie if he knows any bedtime prayers, we are graced with the prayer Jamie remembers his dad taught him. It is indeed useful as they both feel the angeling of rest steal upon them. Claire falls to sleep, but this peacefulness calms Jamie's mind enough for him to write his best friend, telling him of the situation at hand and about his most precious family, then entreating their safety to him. Jamie's strength lies in the love of his wife, his belief in God, and the power of friendship. This chapter delivers on all three. Now, I had a question.
You?
Shush your mouth. Lorraine right, that she was
how did you make her name sound like that?
Lorraine. Stop it.
You just made her real Southern.
Lorraine. I'll take that up. Lorraine Wright.
See?
What am I supposed to say? Lorraine?
Yes.
Lorraine. I'm sorry, Lorraine. Lorraine Wright. Did I do it again?
Uh-huh.
You're a liar.
I'm not. You're holding the end of her name on so long. Go ahead.
How's this? Lorraine?
Just say, Lorraine writes. Just make it part of a sentence because you keep going, Lorraine.
Lorraine writes.
Lorraine writes. Lorraine writes.
Lorraine writes.
There you go.
Okay, now I got to figure out what I wanted to say. Hold on a second.
Lorraine. What's your question for Lorraine?
Hold on a second. Hold on. Okay. She said, Claire falls asleep, but this peacefulness calms Jamie's mind enough for him to write his best friend. Now, do you think Jamie wrote to his friend because Claire fell peacefully asleep? I think that he wrote to his friend because after they talked about stuff, and then of course that the prayer made him think about, and of course the next day, and the fact that this freaking poem
not a poem,
this prayer came from his dad, and Diana specifically points out that he got the prayer not too long before his dad died. So there's a lot of death mentioned, or a lot of possible one death.
And what did Lorraine say that brought this up?
I already read it to you. I'm not going to read it again. So I think that what made Jamie want to get out of bed and write a note to Lord John is that he's thinking of, obviously, with next morning, he's thinking of, you know, they could die, that you're going off to a kind of a battle. Who knows what the outcome is going to be? I think if he had thought of this earlier, he would have written it before they went to bed. I don't think, you know what I'm saying? He knew what the next day was bringing. He doesn't know what the outcome will be, but he knows the next day he's leaving. And I just think that with a little bit of their talking, but especially with the prayer, I do think it helps calm them both. But I think the reason he got up to write was because you can absolutely write out of calmness, but there was something inkling, lurking, whatever in him that urged him. He needed to. So while Jamie's prayer poem allowed Claire to sleep, Jamie saying the prayer wasn't the literal angeling of her rest, right? Because she fell asleep. His angeling, the angeling of his rest, came from writing that note.
It was not a note. That was a full-on letter.
I agree. But I think he had to do that to be able to go and finish resting.
See, a note would have been like, Dear John, if I die, take care of my kids. Peace. That's a note. That's a note you pass. No. A note would have been, Dear John, will you take care of my family if I die? Mark yes, mark no, with little check boxes next to them. That's a note. And that's something you pass in class.
Sure.
Don't you remember those notes you used to write? Do you like me? Check A, yes or no.
Those little cootie catchers?
Sure. All right. And that was chapter 25. And we have finished part 2 of The Fiery Cross. Join us next week when we will be continuing our The Fiery Cross read along with part 3, Alarms and Excursions, chapter 26, entitled The Militia Rises. And I feel like every time we get to a new part, I feel like I'm announcing parts of the Bible. Part 2, chapters 1, 2, and 3. Genesis, chapters 1, Psalm 2. Obviously, that's not a thing because I don't always read the Bible. And if you'd like to sign up to contribute to our read-along, please go to www.outlanderpod.com/fierycross. There you will find a spreadsheet that shows all the available chapters, and if you just message me, I will make sure you get added to it.
I didn't know you were going to say message. I thought you said, if you just mess with me.
Yeah, you want to mess with me? Let's go. You want to contribute?
Yeah, if you really want to mess with us, then you will join our Facebook community. And you can do that by going to outlanderpod.com/group. So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.